This is PCJ Media, broadcasting to South and North America on 9,955 kHz in the 31-meter band. For more information about PCJ, check out our website at www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Coming up, The Happy Station Show. This is the Happy Station Show. At just after 1600 hours UTC, welcome again to another edition of the Happy Station Show, this time on the air for listeners in North America and the Caribbean in the 31-meter band at 9,955 kilohertz. Keith Parent here with you for the next 55 minutes all the way in Taipei, Taiwan. And today's show is going to be an interesting one. The show that I originally had planned, I kind of scrapped at the last moment. And today we're going to be focusing our attention on LPAM and LPFM. Now, what is all that about? Well, stay tuned and find out. Just a couple of notes for some upcoming special editions of the show. Next week on December the 3rd, my guest is going to be Dodie Cowan, formerly of His and Hers on Radio Netherlands from many, many years ago. It is going to be a two-part conversation. In part one, we'll be speaking to Dodie Cowan, and then a few weeks later, we'll be speaking to Deborah Ray, who's really the same person, but that is Deborah Ray, the author. So in the first part of next week's show, Dodie Cowan of His and Hers, and we'll be talking about how His and Hers all came about and how she got involved at Radio Netherlands. And that's next week here on The Happy Station. And next week's show, by the way, is airing to all regions. As I said before, special edition of the shows. Do so. Now, speaking of special editions of Happy Station, coming up, I know this is like way in advance, but I thought I'd mention it right now. The first show of Happy Station, which will be airing on January 2010, which is actually the 7th of January, the first Thursday of the new year, my special guest is going to be Steve Lawrence. Now, you may have heard me mention him a while ago on the show. So, on January the 7th, the first show for 2010, my special guest will be Steve Lawrence. And you may remember him from such hits as Go Away, Little Girl, Pretty Blue Eyes, and many, many others. And of course, he is married to the one and only Edie Gourmet. So, Steve Lawrence, my special guest on January 7th, 2010. Let's kick off now with a little bit of music from Steve Lawrence, and then we'll get to today's show about LPFM and LPAM. What is that? Well, stay tuned. Here's Steve Lawrence and Sunny Side Up.
Keep your sunny side up, up, keep your sunny side up. Try to hide the side that gets blue, then you'll find that sun coming through. Keep your funny side up, and let your laughter come through. Life can be worthwhile, face it with a smile. Keep your sunny side up. Come on and keep your sunny side up, way up, yes, keep your sunny side up. You gotta try to hide the side that gets blue, then you'll find that sun coming through.
keep your funny side up, but up, and let your laughter come through. You, life can be worthwhile. Face it with a smile. Keep your sunny side up. Keep your sunny side up, way up, and let your laughter come through. Life can be worthwhile.
Steve Lawrence and Sunny Side Up, beginning today's edition of The Happy Station Show. Now, what is LPAM and what is LPFM? Well, LP stands for low powered, and of course, AM, we know what that is. And why are we discussing this? Well, there is a radio station in the United States, which is in low-powered FM and AM and pretty soon shortwave, which is called KDX. Now, a number of weeks ago, I got an email from the owner and program director asking me if he could add Happy Station to the schedule, which he has done. He has two KDX channels, KDX1 and KDX2. And by the way, they are streamed on the internet. And I'll give out the URL after we take a listen to him. But let me tell you when Happy Station is heard. It is heard Tuesdays at 19 hours UTC. That's 19 hours UTC on KDX1. And also at 3 hours UTC, also on KDX1. And Happy Station is heard on KDX2 on Thursdays at 20 hours UTC. That's Thursdays at 20 hours UTC. Then again on KDX2 on Saturdays at 24 hours UTC. So check them out online. That's www.kdxradio.com. That's www.kdxradio.com. Well, I wanted to find out, of course, a little bit more about KDX. And as I told Carl Blair, who runs the station, I said, okay, you can carry Happy Station if you want, but on the condition that you appear on the show. Of course, he said yes. And we talked about so many different things, because Carl has been working in radio since 1959, which is a very long time. And we talked about many different aspects of radio, which we'll take a listen to on another show, because today I wanted to focus on KDX itself and low-powered radio stations. So my first question to him was, how did KDX begin?
Well, in the 70s, cable television began coming in to the cities all over the place because they had so many tiers of channels and programming. But we found out that there was a secondary service called Cable FM, which in some cities was able to plug into the back of an FM receiver and deliver radio programming by this alternate method of cable. So here in St. Louis, we founded a Cable FM station called KDX, and the letters were just picked out of the air. K means west of the Mississippi, and the DX is the amateur radio symbol for distance.
Right.
And so the cable company, though, never developed their FM service. They never sold it. So here we had these call letters on the shelf, and along came streaming radio. So I thought, well, let's do that. And it was born.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I remember many years ago, when I was a boy growing up in Canada, how the cable company would always say, oh yeah, we also have Cable FM, you can listen to the FM radio via cable. And to be perfectly honest, to this day, I still have yet to meet anyone that actually connected up their cable to their FM receiver to listen to programming.
I don't think anybody did.
You know, it's sort of a shame, because you can say in a lot of ways, internet radio or live streaming radio has sort of been able to tap into this market where cable radio just wasn't successful.
No, it wasn't, and we didn't know what to do about that because that's a huge promotional problem, and we weren't actually in the business of doing big promotions like that. So
no.
It was up to the cable company to do it, and they just didn't do it.
So when you started KDX Online, the station that you're doing, is it based on the original idea that you had for KDX on cable FM?
I suppose in some sort of evolutionary way it is, but there was a big gap in between there. I'll tell you, though, a funny incidental story about beginning the streaming. A lady friend of mine wanted to have her own talk radio station on the web. And she asked me, since I had a recording studio service that I ran professionally, she asked me if I could start her web radio station, and I had no idea how to do it, but I agreed to do it, and I figured it out and put on, and by the way, I advised her not to do it. I said, there will be tens of thousands of streaming stations. It's a bad idea. And she said, I don't care. I want to do it anyway. So I developed the streaming radio, put it on. It was a display model, and I said, here it is. And she said, thanks for showing me how to do it. Goodbye. But there I was with a station on the air, knowing it was a silly idea to run the thing, but I couldn't stop. And there I was getting permission from different podcasters and programmers to air their programs, just as you extended permission to air the Happy Station on KDX. And suddenly we have this full-time, and by the way, it's multiplied. It's become two radio stations, KDX 1 and 2, with two streams apiece, one for high-speed listeners, and since we learned that 50% of connections are dial-up connections, we have a low speed for them.
You know, something that's quite interesting, I remember maybe about 10 years ago, when there were some programmers saying, we're going to switch everything over to the internet, a lot of people looked at them as being completely crazy. But we've seen, especially in the last since around 2005, how much internet radio has really started to taking off. It's almost like it went from being nothing to something overnight.
Oh, it has, and you know, there's a lot of energy behind it. There are pioneers, really, who are just sticking with it and keeping their stations going, sometimes with no audience, sometimes with a very small audience. But I suppose if they keep doing that, it'll grow, maybe.
Well, it's the kind of thing I think sometimes you, especially for this medium, I think you really need to look, you can't just do it overnight. It can't just happen overnight. I think you need to look at it as something long-term. Almost the same way as, you know, maybe, you know, in the 1950s, how people saw FM radio. They went, okay, maybe we only have like 100 listeners, but at some point down the future, maybe in 10 years or more, you know, it'll kick off. And that's what happened.
It will, and also the people who stick with it will be the ultimate victors, because I think a lot of people throw in the hat and give up along the line, and that leaves the survivors a little more room.
Mm-hmm. So with the programming that you have, how do you look for programming? I mean, do you just spend like a lot of time on the internet and go, oh, this seems interesting, and then let me contact them, or how do you do it?
Well, It's egomania, because I program KDX with things I want to hear, so that all day long I have the best radio in the house. And if someone else wants to join me and listen, they're perfectly welcome.
You know, that sounds pretty much like the guy that founded Blue Note Records, Alfred Lyons and friends and Wolf, I can't remember his first name, but they said, oh, we want to have jazz artists who we like on the label.
right. And I think some enterprises have that kind of motivation. People do what they want, what they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And when it succeeds, that's good.
When with the programming that you do, I mean, do you have any estimate of, you probably do, like how many people do tune in and what kind of things they enjoy tuning into?
Yes. Fortunately, the server software puts a window up on our computer screen that shows when someone is connected. It gives their IP address, which is not a security breach, because all we can do is look that up and find out within 100 miles where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And when people stay connected for a long time, then we can sort of assume that they like what they're hearing, unless they forgot that it was turned on and went to lunch. But yes, it is possible to go back, and then this all saves to the hard drive as a log. So we can go back over the past month and make statistics out of it.
Is the plan then with the statistics at some point to contact maybe potential advertisers to have advertising on the website?
That is tricky because so many of the programs we have are carried as non-commercial, and that's in the agreement. This program is available only as a non-commercial program.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we started sponsoring those programs, we'd be breaching the contract.
See, because I can tell you right now, if you said, Keith, look, somebody wants to sponsor your show, I'd be like, go ahead.
Well, you know, and it varies. For example, here's another sort of twist on the whole thing. A lot of the programs we carry have commercials built in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those producers are paying for their show by getting sponsors. KDX doesn't get a penny out of that. But what we do get is a good free program.
Mm-hmm.
So the quid pro quo is there, but it's not all in money.
Right. So, I mean, do you operate the station yourself, or do you have anybody, does anybody assist you with this?
It's myself plus imaginary people.
Yeah, I've mentioned that before on the show. I said, you know, the guy who created Happy Station, Eddie Starts, I said, you know, Eddie may have died in 1976, but I have a feeling that he's still here in the studio, and some listeners thought I was being serious by that remark.
Well, see, radio lends itself to that kind of imagery.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite radio movies is a movie that came out probably more than 15 years ago called Radio Days by Woody Allen. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Yes, I have, and it's good.
This is a movie, if anybody's listening right now, go to your local video store, rent Radio Days by Woody Allen, because it is really a fun radio movie to watch. It's kind of like, you know, even though the characters of some of these radio shows were fictional, they were all based on real radio shows. You know, and about the funny personalities behind them. I mean, the funniest one that I've ever heard from anybody was the original Amos and Andy that aired on radio. The actors who played it were actually not black. They were white.
Right. And that created a confusing controversy because nobody knew if that was all right to do or not. They couldn't figure it out.
So when do you plan to have the... I want to get onto this subject for a moment, because you're also looking at doing some low-powered broadcasting on FM, AM, and even shortwave.
Yes, that's true.
And what is the regulation concerning this in the United States? Because in many countries around the world, some countries don't allow it at all. Some countries allow more power than others. What about in the United States?
Well, it's interesting. I'll give AM as an example, because the rules are different for FM and shortwave. But AM, it's legal to broadcast with 100 milliwatts of power, that's one-tenth of a watt, going into the final stage or transistor of the transmitter.
Okay.
Not coming out of it, but going into it. Then at the output, 3-meter antenna only, which is about 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And for AM broadcasting, the wavelengths are much longer than 10 feet, so therefore it's fairly inefficient.
Right.
But if a good grounding system is buried in the ground, which then suddenly you're talking about big projects, it will go a couple of miles.
Mm-hmm.
And by setting up another transmitter 2 miles away, being fed from a stream on a computer, people actually in some areas are covering whole communities with these little low-power stations.
So effectively, in a small community, if I understand this correctly, some places they'll have two transmitters set up.
Or more.
So it's almost like a repeater, almost.
It's exactly like a repeater. And there is a system available that allows synchronizing the transmitters so they don't interfere with each other. That way they can all be on the same channel.
You see, this is legal.
It's legal. As long as each transmitter isn't violating the rules that I mentioned.
Right. And what about for FM and shortwave?
That becomes a little trickier because FM isn't a matter of antenna length, but rather of a reading that's taken out in open space with a little sensitivity meter, which must be calibrated to scientific standards. And mm-hmm. this gets very expensive to do. And the signal, say, at 30 feet can only reach a certain power level. It's something that almost no one has the equipment to do. Because shortwave is similar, except a little more power is allowed and longer antennas are allowed, for which reason a signal on shortwave might go a lot farther with low power.
Right. You know, when I was reading stuff online about low-powered FM and AM and shortwave in the United States, I came across some cases where some stations have even lobbied the FCC to do away with them.
Yes, licensed broadcasters, they have large investments, as you know,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want any kind of competition. And you can understand their point of view because they're trying to protect what they're doing. And some of these little stations are very creative, and they're more interesting than the big stations. But, of course, with no expenses, the little stations can afford to be creative. So you're still back to the same old problem that's plagued radio of all kinds, creativity versus business.
Yeah. You know, I've told people how much my budget is for Happy Station.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, back in the days when it was being produced at Radio Netherlands, I mean, with the Radio Netherlands budget that they had for every Sunday for all the shows that was on, I said, with that budget, I can do, for one show, I can probably do 2 years of programming.
Yes. And nobody could figure out how my wife and I were able to come up with 40 hours of programming a week with no budget at all. But you could do it because you know what's involved.
So what when you were doing the programming, that 40 hours of programming, what did you do?
Well, we had some people, some volunteers from the community. One real good one, there was a gentleman named Bruce Hayward, who was a famous area broadcaster and the best interviewer I've ever known. And he was retired, but he came in every Sunday, and we would arrange important guests to have in the studio for him to interview. And then we broadcast this live, which was outstanding, and we recorded it and played it again during the week. And that's one example of a program we created. Then we found a movie critic from one of the universities, and he would come in and we would play pieces from soundtracks of films, and he would do movie commentary for 1 hour. So you see, these kind of programs are interesting to the general audience. And no one else was doing anything like that.
You know, it's funny because in many ways, a lot of people would say that the big broadcasters can probably learn something from the small ones. And I mean, this is sort of, I mean, it's not just in radio. I mean, even in the music industry, the smaller record labels tend to do things that are more experimental and are willing to experiment more than the larger ones that have huge budgets.
That's true. That's true. And if we had more time, I'd get into a story that goes from the 60s, Columbia Records.
We have the time. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I came to this story bit by bit over the years. But I used to know a gentleman named Gene Donanovich, who was a, I guess what you'd call a rep for Columbia Records. He would take all the newest releases around to the radio stations and give the disc jockey copies mm-hmm. of all the new releases, which were, of course, free copies. And at that time, at Columbia Records, Mitch Miller, a name that's known worldwide, and you'd probably play him on Happy Station.
Mitch Miller, known as the world's first record producer.
Yeah. Well, he found talent all over the world. He found a composer in Argentina named Waldo de los Rios, put out about three albums with this guy. They were phenomenal. And they ranged from the traditional South American gaucho music, which is their word for cowboy, sort of,
mm-hmm.
and to the to symphonic music. Waldo de los Rios did a South American suite, just like the Grand Canyon Suite or the Alpine Symphony. It described his region of the world. And Mitch Miller was just a genius in coming up with other... There are so many other names he came up with. Doris Day... I can't even bring to mind, but they're familiar worldwide names.
You know, there's a funny story about Mitch Miller. Quite recently, I interviewed Bob McGrath, who's been on Sesame Street now for many years, and he was one of the singers with Mitch Miller and his gang.
Yeah.
And he said when they would be recording in the late 50s and early 60s, he said the session hadn't even been done. Mitch Miller was on the telephone talking to radio DJs saying, "Hey, I've got a good song for you," and like hum it over the telephone.
Yeah, he was a giant. But here's the sad part of the story. Elvis Presley was brought to Mitch Miller's attention, and Mitch Miller said, "He has no talent. We don't want him." Now, this later, when Elvis went to RCA and became a big hit, this did not go over with the Columbia upper echelon. Mitch Miller was out.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little unfair in a way, because it was a judgment call he had every right to make, and now I'm defending Mitch Miller, but I guess that's the end of the story right there.
But it's probably one of those moments that maybe even now, because he's 97 now, I wonder if he thinks back, you know, maybe I should have signed him.
well, of course. But on the other hand, well, this will be a dangerous thing to say, but on the other hand, he may have been right.
People that work in radio, I've noticed, are pretty much a special breed. They're very different from people, let's say, that work in television. It's almost like to work in radio, you need to have a certain type of personality, whereas in television, you really don't have to have much personality as long as you can read off the teleprompter.
Well, I would add to that, on television, you have to look fairly attractive.
Yeah, as I tell people, I have the perfect face for radio.
Yes. and another thing about many radio people, and this isn't very nice of me to say, but a lot of radio people have no personality at all when they're not on the radio.
That reminds me, and I'm not going to mention any names, but there was a guy that I worked with a few years ago, and on air, you'd swear this guy was like a chatterbox. And he could talk nonstop, and he was like super friendly and anything and everything. And we used to wonder how he had this persona, because it was almost as if when he went into the studio, the mic light went on, he became somebody else. Because in the corridors and in the office, he was like, "No, no," and he would talk like flat. And you listen to him on air, we go, "How could this be the same person?"
It's a mystery. And And it's, you know, it's funny because nobody's really captured that in, say, a motion picture or a TV show, ironically. But that differential of the personality, that would be a good study.
Yeah. You know, I think that I always you remember the old Mary Tyler Moore show.
Yes.
My favorite character on the show, and I think with a lot of other people as well, was the Ted Baxter character, played by Ted Knight.
He was just wonderful.
He was wonderful at that. And you know what? When I watch CNN, now here in Asia we get CNN International, which is different from the domestic programming that you see in the US. We get some shows that are carried from the CNN US service. But there's one on-air anchor at CNN Domestic, and I swear, when I watch him, I think of Ted Baxter. And I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I remember this one episode of Mary Tyler Moore where Murray said, "Ted, I can't put the directions in the cue cards." And Ted said, "Why not? Because last week you said, a flood happened in southern Florida. Take your glasses off and look concerned." And there's this one guy on CNN, what every time I see him doing like some type of like human interest story, it just seems so fake. But in radio, I think that's a little bit more difficult to do. For some reason, I don't have that impression when I listen to people on radio. So let's get back to KDX1 and KDX2 for a moment. By the way, their website is www.kdxradio.com. If somebody goes there right now, I mean, not at this very moment. What can they expect if they hit on, let's say, schedule?
On KDX1, at this moment in time, we are airing Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. She's being carried on about 500 to 600 outlets of all kinds, AM, FM, everything. And her show is an award-winning interview and news show. On KDX2, we have a program from Keene, New Hampshire, called Free Talk Live, mm-hmm. with Ian and Mark, the hosts, on which listeners are invited to call in and talk about anything they want whatsoever. And that's a successful show because they are on AM, FM, and podcast, stream, and are very likable, and they wrangle with controversial subjects, and
right.
they disagree with each other, they agree with each other, they have interviews on sometimes. It's all very interesting.
So the shows that you carry on KDX 1 and 2, are they're obviously not only podcasts. Some of them also air on terrestrial radio.
There's a big mixture, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And also we have a lot of the public domain stuff from the old days, like the Spike Jones Network radio show, the Henry Morgan Network radio show, Bob and Ray from radio of the past.
Uh-huh.
And because those were such high-quality shows that they stand up today.
Right. And by the way, KDX is also carrying the Happy Station on what are the date, the times and days?
You may have put me on the spot because... Oh, wait, I found the note. Here it is. Sunday, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time on KDX1. Tuesday, 1 p.m. KDX1 Central Standard Time. Wednesday, 7 p.m. KDX1. And your one appearance on KDX2 is on Saturday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, U.S. time.
Now, if anybody didn't have time to write down those times, I'll give them out later on in GMT time, so listeners Uh-oh. Who are listening to this program overseas can also tune in and log in.
I don't know how to do mathematics.
Nor do I. That's why I went into radio. Carl, thank you very much for joining us on the Happy Station today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I always love talking to people that also work in radio. It always ends up being a fascinating discussion.
Well, I'm going to go back into the hallway and get real boring after this call is over.
Real boring? Why? What do you have to do?
Well, I have to change personality.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. We were just talking about that. Carl, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And I was speaking there with Carl Blair, the owner of KDX. Once again, their website is www.kdxradio.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I would like you to join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called the Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, radioforall.net, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called The Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
Thank you very much, Peter. And Peter Anthony Holder will join us again very soon on The Happy Station with his odd brand of news. Now, we began today's show with an interview with Carl Blair, who runs KDX, which is running The Happy Station show. Now, there's one low-powered radio station that has been in the news recently, and that's KENC. That's KENCRADIO.com. And they're a low-powered radio station in Oregon. Now, why has this station been in the news? Well, they were shut down by the FCC for reasons that seem to be a little unclear. Shall we put it this way? The FCC is saying one thing one day and then something the other day. Now, of course, we have to find out a little bit more about this. So I contacted the owner of the station who came up with the whole idea. His name is Kenneth Cartwright. And I wanted to ask him first a little bit about the community and how this station got off the ground.
One of the little aspects of the Federal Communications Commission allows for low-power AM, and it's both a blessing and a curse. In our particular case, it was a blessing because it allowed us to operate any number of transmitters at 100 milliwatts, one-tenth of a watt. And it was the only frequency available in our area that we could either afford or that was completely available.
Mm-hmm.
And so each morning at 6:30 in the morning until 9:30, I'm up on the radio giving weather report, traffic reports, actually doing a sunrise report, as we call it, as I sit here and look off to the east into the Cascade Mountains. And it served our community quite well up until recently.
You know, the shutdown, I mean, I was reading about this online, and I find it rather strange that just out of the blue, they would shut you down. Because within the United States, my research that I've done was finding out there was not just like a few of these small, really local stations, but there's rather a big percentage of them. So why pick on you?
Well, we were targeted because we had a high profile. First of all, recently I was married. My wife and I chose to get married on the radio, which we stream live via internet, so that we could get our family and friends to be with us. It was the only way we could do it.
Mm-hmm.
My family lived back east in New York, Pennsylvania, Florida, and she has family spread out all over, and friends as well. Well, the Oregonian, which is the state largest newspaper in our state, found out about that, called us for an interview, thought it was an interesting story. And that, according to the FCC agent, attracted his attention to our low-power AM station. And he claims that that's what brought him down for a visit.
You know, when I did contact the FCC to get their viewpoint of this, and I had the agent's name, and they just declined to comment. You know, again, it's almost like my feeling, and I mean, I don't know how much you can say on this, but my feeling, it's sort of like he did this because he had to show that he was doing something or he wanted some type of promotion. Because when I contacted the FCC, his office said, oh, we don't want to talk about this. It just something's just very strange about it. Not from your side, but from their side.
Right. I understand, and I concur with you. In fact, the reporter from the Oregonian, Katie Muldoon, when she called Bin Nguyen and talked to him and his Vancouver office, she asked what prompted his visit. And before he said the newspaper article to her, he told her that he'd had several phone calls. Now, that when I talked to Katie after her interview, I said, well, now that's a first. He told me when he came down here that he came down because of the article. And I asked him point blank who complained and was I interfering with anyone's frequency. And he said, no one complained. We read it in the paper. And no, you're not interfering with anyone's frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done is I have filed a Freedom of Information Act with the FCC to find out who complained and if that was done in writing on his initial report. And I'll have that name, if there's one available, in about 30 days. But personally, I feel there's several engineers for large radio stations in the Portland market, and it is their goal to shut little low-power AM stations down because they feel that they're not necessary. They cut into the market share. And I say this from some blogs that I recently visited and saw it in their own handwriting. So I'm sure that the complaint to the FCC came from outside of this community for sure, and I'm thinking the Portland market probably engineers from the larger stations.
You know, the idea of the kind of radio station that you're running, I mean, our show airs in New Zealand, which has so many of these small, you know, milliwatt radio stations spread out throughout New Zealand. And they've been doing it for many years. And when I contacted somebody that I know that runs one of these stations, I said, has there ever been a case where anybody in New Zealand running these stations has had a visit from the Telecommunications Commission or anything? And he said, never in 30-odd years. He says it's happened where maybe there's a technical glitch, let's say, for FM, and they're interviewing with a licensed FM transmitter maybe in the next city. But usually what they'll do is they'll notify the local station, say, oh, we think you're having an interference problem. Can you repair it? And that's it. But they've never shut anybody down.
Well, I wish we could say the same here. Low power AM radio actually works very, very well. And there was a provision in the FCC laws to allow for this very type of operation. There's no provision in there for community radio, but there is a provision in there for low power AM operation of certain devices, and the transmitters that we use, the Hamilton Rangemaster 1000, certainly are in that category, and they're FCC certified under 15.219. And so for the FCC to move into a small town and bring their 500-pound gorilla to shut me off because I'm broadcasting 14 blocks per transmitter instead of two,
mm-hmm,
is outrageous. This community has responded by writing letters to our state senators. I have files full of letters and emails that people have sent just in the last few days expressing their outrage. And we are complying with the FCC, but we're appealing. We're hoping that our congressman will step in. We really need community radio. It's important to this community. I go to every city council meeting, planning commission meeting, town hall meeting. I come back the next day, report on it, bring council members and individuals in to interview about our community. I play a format of music that's more indigenous to our community. We're very civic-minded. We run sports games from the high school, and without it, we're a voiceless community having to listen to the mindless babble of large megawatt stations out of Portland, and I guess that's what they wanted.
How long were you on air for before all this happened?
Oh, just over 2 years, 26 months, Keith.
So 2 years, everything is running fine. Then, as to quote you, a gorilla came in and decided to shut you down for different reasons that he's telling you and different reasons that he's telling somebody else.
That's right. I'm still streaming our audio, but we unfortunately still have many, many people in our community that aren't served by internet. They don't have internet or computers online,
mm-hmm.
either because of religious beliefs or because of social beliefs. And so we're considering whether or not we want to continue our internet service. It doesn't really do for the community what we wanted to do with the antenna. So we're trying to decide which way to go through the appeal process, and should we lose the appeal, where do we go from here?
Since all of this happened, have you been contacted by different media outlets in the U.S. To cover this story?
I have, and at first my intention was to agree to do this and put as much pressure on the FCC to make their lives as miserable as they've made mine. But in hindsight, I'm being very selective about who I speak with. We have an opportunity to educate people through this process. And for me, I'd rather not use this to create sympathy for me and sensationalism. I'd rather use this as an opportunity to educate individuals that if you have a communication need, and if you have a sensitivity to your needs within your community, there are opportunities if your country and your area will allow it for things like low power radio without spending mega thousands of dollars or resources to put a community radio station on the air. It's not rocket science. It is easy to do. We were the first one, certainly in Oregon, to do that with low power. And I really would invite listeners to your show, Keith, that if they have a desire for community radio and they can't afford the cost of large shortwave transmitters or FM or large AM equipment, there is another way to do it if your local laws and codes will allow for low-power AM. It's very effective, very cost-effective.
You know, just recently, I interviewed the owner of a station called KDX, which is also a low-powered radio station. They stream online as well. And we were talking about this, and he says it's funny because the large media outlets, let's say like National Public Radio and others that are owned by corporations, will quite often turn around and say, you know, we will believe in the freedom of the media and everything else, unless you're big. He said, if you're a small operator like myself, he said, it's always an uphill battle trying to battle these guys in many ways.
Oh, it is. And you can be sure, Keith, that National Public Radio was involved in the fight several years ago when low power FM was presented to Congress. They were at the forefront of fighting against it, and initially their filing said they were against it because they were afraid of the squeeze into the bandwidth. They want, from an engineering standpoint, they wanted more range, more buffer in between the different frequencies. But that's hogwash. Well, anybody who knows anything about radio knows that through compression, you can get a lot of frequencies in there without bumping up against somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And really what we found out in retrospect through lobbyists and Freedom of Information Act was that the more local radio there is, they have less audience. And if they have less audience, it means they have less financial income. So they were proud of the problem as well.
I think maybe the opposition comes from the large players, like we were just talking about, because you're doing something which is it's kind of, you could say, trailblazing in many ways, because you're doing something different. You're showing that you can communicate with a local audience, with a community, and spend very little money doing it.
Well, you can do that. I mean, we chose to make a reasonable investment in studio in order to accommodate what we thought would be the needs of the community for broadcasting and music. But you can do it with something as simple as an iPod and a microphone and a small computer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not that much of an investment. And many people who use this same low-power AM as hobbyists, that's exactly what they do. They have an iPod, a computer with a microphone interface, and an iTunes library, and that's all they use. So it's very efficient, very effective.
I think anybody who does something different, you know, put it this way, it's the people, you can say, that are out of place or eccentric that usually come up with the most interesting ideas.
That is so true, Keith. That is so true.
Ken, thank you very much for taking some time to talk with us on the Happy Station Show. It's been a great pleasure, and I hope that everything works out for you.
I'm the eternal optimist, Keith, and I thank you for your interest in this.
And I was speaking there with Kenneth Cartwright, owner of KENCAM, 1620 on the AM dial, of course. And their website, if you want to find out more about this radio station or listen to their live stream, is www.kencradio.com. That's www.kencradio.com. And with that, we've come to the end of this show. And, oh, by the way, I should mention that, you know, if there's any, of course, further developments with KENC, we will definitely let you know. I'd like to have Ken back on the show at some point in the near future. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for all of them. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Perron all the way in Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios, amigos, and sayonara. You have been listening to PCJ Media, broadcasting to North America and South America on 9,955 kHz in the 31-meter band. If you want more information about PCJ, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.